From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Concord.
Martinez.
Hercules.
I'm from Marina, California.
SF State, wherever that is.
Coming up, we'll delve into the multi-year FBI investigation that alleges State Senator Leland Yee accepted bribes.
Politics, crime, gangsters, Chinese cultures, financial crimes, physical violent crimes or allegations, a gamut of legal issues and crime involved here.
The criminal justice system takes long enough for one person. You have 26 defendants total, and also three of them are very, very big names. It's going to be a very, very long process.
Then we'll hear how Oakland's first Chinese-speaking cop helped change community police relations in Chinatown.
People in Chinatown were very skeptical because they never really had any personal interaction with the police.
That's all coming up next on Cross Currents. Last week, State Senator Leland Yee was briefly arrested after an FBI investigation alleged he was part of an elaborate conspiracy to defraud citizens and illegally traffic firearms.
Hundreds of officers are said to have been involved in a series of raids in Sacramento and the Bay Area.
Ironically, Senator Yee has been a major advocate for gun control.
If what federal prosecutors now say is true, Yee was on both sides of the fence of gun control and weapons trafficking.
The story is sounding like a Hollywood screenplay. It involves an FBI probe accusing Leland Yee of accepting funds from an undercover agent posing as a businessman for a medical marijuana dispensary in Arizona. Yee is also accused of being connected to a convicted felon who goes by the name of Raymond Shrimp Boy Chow. The accusations have provoked calls for Yee to step down, including from Governor Jerry Brown and Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom.
I think Senator should resign for the benefit not only of himself, focus on his own problems, but the entire institution. Fundamentally, this is a sad day for all of us because it's all about public trust.
That's Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom. On Monday, Yee made an appearance in court, but he hasn't entered a plea yet. The FBI allegations have brought up many questions about the intricacies of campaign contributions. The San Francisco Chronicle has been reporting widely on the FBI's investigation into Senator Leland Yee and 25 others. Chronicle reporters Henry Lee and Vivian Ho have been covering this unfolding story in detail, and they join me now to give us a recap of what we know so far.
Well, State Senator Leland Yee, self-described reformed Chinatown gangster Raymond Shrimp Boy Chow, and Keith Jackson, who's a consultant to both Yee and Mr. Shrimp Boy, are now charged by the feds in a staggering complaint accusing them of a number of crimes, including deceiving citizens of honest services, trafficking in guns, money laundering. So this is a public corruption case with ties to the Chinese gang that Mr. Chow allegedly runs. It has implications for politicians and is just an unbelievable set of circumstances.
So can you tell us a little bit more about these societies like Yi Kung Tong, which I think means Brotherhood of Freemasonry?
I believe
Freemason
so.
Society?
This specific organization was started around the time of the gold rush to help Chinese immigrants. And in this affidavit, one of the defendants says, well, there's a legitimate side of this group and an illegitimate side. Now, those who are with the group want to hold themselves at arm's length with Mr. Chow and the other defendants. They're saying there is a legitimate side to this group, and our basic tenet is to help Chinese immigrants.
And what role do these kinds of societies generally play in Chinatown and in San Francisco society and politics?
It's kind of like the same as any kind of union or society. You know, there's strength in numbers, and they provide the support that a lot of minority groups don't get when they first come to this country.
So really helping new immigrants.
Exactly.
And Raymond Chow is an immigrant himself. He's actually a Chinese citizen. He's applying for U.S. citizenship, correct?
That's correct. He has what's known as an S visa. Some call that a snitch visa, but yes, he is trying to become a citizen here in the U.S.
So there's 137 pages of this indictment. I started to read through the affidavit. What's in it?
what's not in it? That's the question, I think. It's a very, very lengthy investigation that they go very much into detail with in the affidavit. They talk about how it started in about 5 years ago. One FBI agent finally made a connection into this brotherhood. And through that, another FBI agent met Raymond Chow. And from there, that FBI agent ended up getting so undercover in this case that he was actually inducted into the brotherhood as an honorary member.
How dangerous is that sort of a covert operation?
It's definitely very dangerous, and he played it off as that he was a member of the East Coast Mafia, that he had connections and that he could make this stuff happen, and that he also had a lot of criminal dealings on the East Coast, that he needed some arms, money, and all that to help finance. It's definitely a very well thought out, very well planned sort of operation.
So, Henry, you've been covering crime for years. You cover this stuff all of the time. How big of a story do you think that this is? Where does it fit into kind of criminal justice coverage?
Well, it really ranks really high up there, Holly, because you've got this confluence of politics, crime, gangsters, Chinese cultures, financial crimes, physical violent crimes or allegations, whether you see that entrapment, a gamut of legal issues and crime involved here.
And it reads like a crime novel, this affidavit, this 137-page affidavit. How long will this take to go through the system?
The criminal justice system takes long enough for one person. You have 26 defendants total, and also three of them are very, very big names. It's going to be a very, very long process.
And that's what one of the defense attorneys said, is that, you know, you have these big names and you start with this big sort of scandal and a reminder that in our system you're innocent until proven guilty. What do you think the possibilities of, you know, this being a really big deal right now and then turning out not to be such a big deal in the future, not as serious as it appears to be?
I think no matter what happens, I mean, it's you're innocent until proven guilty in the criminal justice system. But as you mentioned before, with the court of public opinion, for a politician to have these sort of allegations lobbed at him, it'll be very difficult for him to come back from this, even if these allegations prove to be not true.
And they just canceled a Democratic fundraiser, a golf tournament that was supposed to happen, and they've canceled it. So it looks like it's having deeper ramifications for sort of politics in general and the Democratic Party in specifically.
Yeah, absolutely. When you also have two other Democrats who are now under a cloud, and you've got, you know, members of his own party telling him, you know, get out of here. We can't have you stink up this wonderful organization, this, you know, hallowed institution that's the Senate or the Assembly. You know, leave. So it very clearly has a lot of implications beyond what this case alleges.
Henry Lee is a reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle, and we're also speaking with the Chronicle's Vivian Ho. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to Cross Currents. So the case against Senator Leland Yee centers on the idea that he accepted campaign donations for political favors, alleged bribery. How different is what he did from everyday workings of trying to raise, you know, $70,000 or more in a political campaign? I mean, we hear all the time that politicians have to be raising money pretty much all the time in order to stay in office. So what's the big difference here?
Well, that's a really good question, Holly, because indeed politicians have constituents who expect certain things of them. Like, if you do this, will you at least get the door open? Well, in this case, we have things on tape in which Leland Yee allegedly, there's a specific A to B connection between, okay, if you give me the money for this, I will do this.
What investigators are alleging is that Senator Yee crossed that line between, I will represent you if you elect me, and he helped me get elected by contributing to my campaign, and pay to play. He crossed that line into, just if you give me money, I will make this happen for you.
That's the allegation. And, you know, reporters like all of us sitting around this table frequently do slice and dice and look at where political contributions came from and then what the voting record actually looks like. And so you can draw comparisons to where political donations came from and the voting record. Mm-hmm. But that is somehow different than out and out bribery. We're talking about this line. How fine is it?
Yeah, and they have to be careful, too, because Leland Yee is quoted in the affidavit as saying, well, I can't do that. That's illegal or that's pay to play. So there's going to be a lot of parsing of what Yi allegedly said by a good defense lawyer saying, well, you know what? That's not connected directly. You can't prove that this was a, you know, cause effect. So that, I mean, on a daily basis, you there will be many, many, you know, letters of support, you know, a phone call, say, hey, can you meet with such and such? But when you have this alleged direct connection, a cause and effect, you know, people on tape saying, hey, I will give you X amount of money if you do Y, and then Y occurs, then it's going to be really difficult for the defense. It's going to be challenging for them to surmount that.
I think it was especially very disappointing for the Asian American community, though. You know, Lilian Yi, for so long, was such a big figurehead in the community, and he was sort of, you know, the local made good, the local boy who went on and did it. And for these allegations to be brought against him now, it's very shocking for many.
Yeah, it's distressing, and obviously we can't paint everyone with any race with a broad brush, but it's just, you know, you have this model minority stereotype, and you see people like Leland Yee doing well and, you know, coming down hard against guns and violent video games, and to see this fall from grace. I mean, he's all over the media. Reporters are chasing him, surrounding him at his house, at the federal building, getting in and out of cars. I mean, this is just it is a shock.
And, I mean, our criminal justice system is supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. Do politicians have to live by a different standard, do you think? I mean, people seem to be pointing the finger at him, you know, that these allegations in and of themselves are damning.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when you have people who are in the public trust, from politicians to police officers to teachers to firefighters, you know, we have a story today in the Chronicle about charges against a San Francisco firefighter who was allegedly drinking and driving and crashed into a motorcycle and things like that. It's always shocking because you look up to these people. And when you see one bad apple, as they like to say, you wonder, are all the apples bad? And this is someone that we trusted. So it is, there is somewhat of an expectation that these kinds of people who are leaders, you know, abide by a higher standard.
Henry Lee and Vivian Ho are both reporters with the San Francisco Chronicle. We'll put a link to their stories at KALW.org. Just click on Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. The 137-page FBI affidavit we were just talking about reads like a crime novel, similar to previous chapters in Bay Area history. In the 1980s, newspapers were regularly reporting on growing Asian gang problems in Oakland. In 1981, the Oakland Police Department created a special unit to address the issue. But developing trust between law enforcement and the Chinatown community was a difficult task. In this piece from our archives, we'll hear about the creation of Oakland's first gang unit. Here's student reporter Sina Woodson.
I'm walking around Chinatown with Harry Hu. He's the former gang unit leader for the Oakland Police Department. He's tall and burly, and although he recently retired from the force, he still wears his gun and badge proudly on his belt. He's taking me on the foot patrol route he followed every day in the early 1980s. As he strolls down 8th Street, most people seem to recognize him. Some wave and others stop to chat.
I used to hang out this place almost every day.
Now he don't walk in Chinatown anymore.
People are friendly now, but when Hu was first assigned here, they didn't speak to him so freely.
People in Chinatown were very skeptical because they never really had any, you know, personal interaction with the police.
Hu says recent immigrants in particular had misgivings.
They come from war-torn countries. They come from third world where the police was not there to protect the citizens, and often they were corrupted. So they don't trust the police.
That made it hard to solve crimes in Oakland's Chinatown. So the OPD hired Harry Hu in 1981. He was the first bilingual Asian American officer in the department. He spoke Cantonese, Mandarin, and Toisinese. But Hu says because of his size, lots of people assumed he wasn't Chinese, and they didn't realize he could understand them.
And people were just talking as I was walking down the street and say, man, now they put a Hawaiian here, you know, and not knowing that I was Chinese.
But eventually, people in Chinatown figured it out and started talking to Hu. It took about 6 months, but pretty soon, he says informants were coming to him. Some residents would even wait for Hu to come back from vacation to report urgent matters such as robberies. In return for the information, he kept residents informed about law enforcement activities. Hu's walking partner in the early 80s was Rodney G.
Just them getting that information and feedback and from Harry made them feel better. I could see that. And to feel better that we're involved. Really involved.
With the help of Chinatown residents and merchants, Hu and G learned everyone's given names and nicknames and kept their pictures on file. Hu even knew many of the alleged criminals personally. In one major extortion incident, Hu says the entire case broke because of a nickname.
Because one of the suspects demanding the extortion money gave a nickname was Rice Boy. And I remember who Rice Boy was. Because I just stopped him like 2 weeks prior to that incident. I said, I know Rice Boy.
That kind of success led to Harry Hu's transfer to the intelligence unit in 1989. At the time, Asian organized crime was on the rise. Newspapers were constantly reporting on the growing gang phenomenon, like in these articles from the Washington Post in 1984.
Fear of the 1997 Chinese takeover of Hong Kong has sent a flood of Asian investment into Chinese-American communities, creating new opportunities for both legitimate businesses and a new breed of criminal gangs.
A loose-knit Asian mafia with criminal operations in Hong Kong, Taiwan, and more than a dozen North American cities is responsible for a fifth of the heroin imported into the United States. Attorney General William French Smith said the Chinese triad societies are part of new crime cartels emerging in the Far East and spreading to the West.
Harry Hu was working to stop those cartels. As an officer in the OPD's intelligence unit, he started working on the gang problem. And in 1991, Hu became part of Oakland's first gang unit.
And I was there by myself with my partner, two people, gang unit for the whole city of Oakland. And we were busy.
Hu says one gang in particular that had formed in Oakland, called Wahop Toe, began to pose a major threat to the Chinatown community. In 1991, the gang conducted door-to-door extortions all over the neighborhood, as well as in San Francisco. Soon, the operation extended to other parts of the United States and China. Harry Hu says that's when the FBI got involved.
And we were deputized as federal agents for the FBI, so we cross-designated. We could literally go anywhere, you know, within U.S., and we have authority as a federal agent.
Hu says, over time, the gang unit virtually eliminated organized crime in Chinatown. Officer Rodney G says the key was knowing the criminals and the neighborhood in which they operated.
They get away with stuff when they have they're anonymous. You know, you don't know who they are, but when you know them before they even commit the crime, boy, you got a big jump on them.
So, this was the shop that Mr. Jin used to own.
Hu says he doesn't see many young people hanging out in Chinatown anymore. He thinks residents and merchants feel safe to a certain extent, but admits crime is still an issue.
But it's not blatantly and right in front of you and causing a lot of problems for the community in Chinatown and threatening, you know, the well-being of Chinatown.
According to Hu, some of the men who used to threaten Chinatown have now turned their lives around.
They're now family men. They have business established. Yeah, they will still see each other, you know, out in the street and talk about the old days, you know, and they say how stupid they were before, you know.
Hu retired from the Oakland Police Department in 2005, but the gang unit he helped build is still in operation. Today's Chinatown is a vibrant place with markets and shoppers and crowded sidewalks. Harry Hu helped make it a safer place and broke the barrier between police and community. Now that's a goal all over the country, but in Hu's day, it was something extraordinary. In Oakland, I'm Sina Woodson for Cross Currents.
That That piece was from our archives, reported by Sina Woodson when she was a student at Mills College in Oakland. You can find more local stories at KALW.org. Just click on Cross Currents. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Julie Kane, Jen Cheehan, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Ashley Ann Krugbaum, Stephen Short, Ray Sue Sussman, and Melanie Young. Today's show was produced by Leela Day and engineered by Seth Samuel. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And because of your support, we can proudly say we are independent public radio. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll check up on whether tech companies who took a tax break are truly giving back to their new mid-market neighborhoods.
We always talk about turning around neighborhoods and about improving a neighborhood. And there's two different ways to think about a neighborhood. One way to think about it is the community who's in the neighborhood, and the other way to think about it is a zip code. If a politician wants to get out there and say, we've turned around the Tenderloin, we've turned around the mid-market area, if you've turned it around by moving out all of the people and supplanting them with an entire new group, then you haven't fixed anything other than a zip code.
That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. And we'll leave you with another edition of my mixtape, where people share songs that mean something special to them. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan. Take it away.
My name is Tim Rayborn. I live in Berkeley. The song I've chosen is the Brandenburg Concerto No. 3 by Johann Sebastian Bach, specifically the recording made by the English Concert in the early 1980s. This recording really opened my eyes to what early music could sound like and how fantastic groups could sound playing on period instruments, and it still remains my favorite version of the Brandenburg Concertos.
The cliche.
And the world is your oyster.
They really put the cart before the horse.
This was a smoking gun.
It seems like it's everywhere. On the news.
Is this game of political football going to hurt the Democrats in the end?
From politicians.
There is no silver bullet that can bring down gas prices right away.
But not here on Cross Currents from KALW News. Tune in to our local news magazine weekdays at 5 for the anti-cliche. We'll throw stuff at you you've never heard before. Like this.
I had a patient who was absolutely cured by blueberry juice.
Or this.
For now, what we want is the gooey, goopy form of life.
And we'll spare you drivel like this.
A tool in our toolbox.
Path of least resistance.
The bottom line.
Ugh. Give me some more of that good stuff.
I believe that people who listen to radio are quality people.
That's what I'm talking about. Check us out weekdays at 5. We're Cross Currents on KALW 91.7.